beautiful Sabbath, and I'm glad that we can be together here today. Am I on?
No.
Well, okay. Am I on now? Yeah, okay. There we go. I'm glad you're here today because there's some things I need to share with you. I need to tell you just how important you are to me. You are loved with a profound love, and there's nothing more special to me outside of my relationship with Jesus and my relationship with my family than my church families here in Healdsburg and Cloverdale. I'll tell you, when you invited us to come here 4 years ago, it was a real treat to come back to our family here and so many friends that we've known through the years and to develop new friendships. And you folks have been very patient with us as we've been on this learning curve and learning how to do ministry, how to do life here in Healdsburg. And we're just grateful that we have you and we love you. I'll tell you, I think I honestly have the best job in town. Are you aware I get paid to go to kids' birthday parties? And I don't even have to be the party clown to do that. I get paid to visit people like Lua Horning and eat the best chocolates made on the planet. I love it. Even though it's not good for me, it sure tastes good. When there's a tragedy that strikes, I get to move in close to people and hold their hearts in my hand and journey with them through those difficult chapters. Every Sabbath, I get to open the Word of God and connect people with Jesus through the Word. I get to move into churches and help them to give voice to their dreams and help them to accomplish their God-given destiny. I have the best job in town. I'm absolutely convinced of it. But it's also, as you're well aware, a job that carries with it a certain amount of wear and tear. And after a while, it can start doing some things to you if you're not very intentional about keeping your health going in all these different areas. And I suspect that that's why people like Valerie Williams every now and then will say to me, "Now, Dan, you do whatever it takes to stay healthy." You've told me that numerous times, and I have taken it to heart. So last year, when the Northern California Conference passed a new policy, my ears perked up and I began to pay attention because they passed a policy that provides for qualifying pastors to take sabbaticals of up to 3 months. And you might ask, what does it take to qualify for that? Well, first of all, these are pastors who have to have given the Northern California Conference at least 5 years of service. Furthermore, they're supposed to turn in their monthly reports. And beyond that, they're supposed to show up for the pastor's meetings. In other words, just do your job. And so what happened was, earlier this year, I decided maybe this is something I need to do. So I submitted an application, and just 2 weeks ago, we got word that the application has been approved for a sabbatical to be taken in the summer of 2010. That's 1 year from now, so we're giving you lots of heads-up warning here. We've already taken this to our church elders, and they are supportive of this. We've taken it to our church board, and they recognize the value that this will bring to me and to the congregation. Now, whenever I talk to people about what's happening here, because a number of you have been aware of this because you've been part of the process, but now we're bringing the whole church family into this. But people will ask, you know, their first question is why are you doing this? You don't seem to be in any kind of crisis. Things seem to be going all right. So why are you doing this? Well, it's because I believe that healthy pastors are essential to healthy churches. And sometimes after a while, the wear of ministry can mess with your head, with your heart, your body, your relationships. And sometimes you just need to step back and regroup so that you're good for the long haul. I really want to be a blessing to this church because you matter to me. And I want to be a blessing for the long haul so that we can journey with joy together. There are a few things you need to know going into this. Like I've told you, I am not in any crisis. I'm not on the verge of a crisis. It's kind of like, well, I think of it as taking my car to Randy. Sometimes I take my road off the car, and I take it to Randy, and he does maintenance work, so I don't get in trouble. What's that? Oh, yeah, there we go again. What do you call that? Take my car off the road. Maybe I do need some help. I take my car off the road so maintenance work can be done, so I'm safe on the road and I can travel with joy. And that's the kind of picture I have of what we can do with this sabbatical. You need to know that all the ministry bases will be covered during that time. We will have speakers every Sabbath. We will have people to take care of you when there's visits that need to be made. If there's a funeral, we'll have somebody prepared to come in and take care. All the ministry bases we cover, you will not be left in a lurch. And one of the other things that I'm particularly excited about is that not only will I have an opportunity for a renewal journey, the church will have an opportunity for its own renewal journey. And the elders are already making some broad stroke, they're mapping things out in broad strokes in terms of what can happen in the church here. You need to know that in the coming week you will be getting a letter so that you can get in on more of the details, and so those who are not with us today can find out what will be happening with that. But also, we want to invite you to be part of the dialogue on this. Next Sabbath, following the fellowship dinner, those of you who would like to, we're going to have an open meeting. I think we'll just meet in the youth room. And if you've got questions, bring them. Let's talk. And we'd like to get your input, your creative ideas on some of the renewal plans that we're developing for our local church so that everybody's part of the process, part of the discussion, and this is something that maximizes our opportunities for the future. You need to know that between now and June 1 of next year, there's no holding back. I mean, there's too much living to do. There's too much ministry to do in this church to hold back. We're going at it full steam. Every day we will live for Jesus. Every Sabbath we will come together and worship God with everything we've got. Every day and week and month we will be together as a church family, and we will be reaching into our community to touch our friends' lives for Jesus Christ and invite them to be part of our church family. So again, you are special. And because of that, we want to journey well together as the years roll on. Now, this morning, as Jill has indicated, we're taking a slice of Adventist history and looking at what that means for our life in the church today. The story takes us back to 1876, and that was a very colorful year in America. It was in 1876 that America celebrated its first 100 years with the Centennial Exposition in Philadelphia. It was in 1876 that Alexander Graham Bell fashioned a rather crude device. It was a wooden box with a funnel and a cup of acid and a bunch of copper wires. He called it a telephone. It was in 1876 that Thomas Edison built his first laboratory. It was in 1876 that General Custer took his last stand at the Little Big Run. It was in 1876 that an interesting presidential campaign was brought to an end, with both Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden claiming the victory. Would you believe it? The final outcome had to be determined by the Supreme Court, and the whole ugly ordeal was played out in the sunny state of Florida. I wonder if they had hanging chads in those days. It was in 1876 that a couple of Adventist preachers by the name of James White and John Loughborough, who happened to be the first pastor of this church, but these two men got together and they said, we want to do something adventuresome. We want to do something fun. So they put together a box of Adventist literature complete with all the graphics of those wild beasts out of Revelation. They put them in a box with a friendly letter and sent it across the sea to a little island no one had ever heard of before except in the storybooks, the island of Pitcairn. They had no doubt read the story of Captain Bligh and the mutiny on the Bounty. And when the naval battle was finally over, there were 9 mutineers and a number of Tahitians that moved to the island of Pitcairn and set up housekeeping in the year 1790. The next 10 years were particularly difficult. They drank way too much. They got into fights all the time. And by the turn of the century in 1800, there was one man living on that island. His name was Alexander Smith. All the other men were dead. So here on the island of Pitcairn, we had one man with 11 women and 23 children in the middle of nowhere. Well, one day, Smith began to rummage through an old trunk, and there he found a Bible and an Anglican prayer book. And as he read the story of Jesus, his heart was profoundly touched. He was a converted man. He gave his life to Jesus. And he immediately entered into ministry by teaching the children there on the island about God.
Well, when James White and John Loughborough found out about what was going on in Pitcairn, they recognized that there was a God-given opportunity going here. So they sent the box of tracks. There was just one problem. How were they going to get this box of tracks from California to Pitcairn? They had no idea. All they could think to do was to box them up, put them on a ship that was headed in that general direction, and trust that God would somehow see that box through. Well, several months later, that box of tracks ended up on the rocky shores of Pitcairn. The people there opened up the crate, and they took a look at all those tracks with the funny-looking beast all over them, and they said, "Ooh, this looks scary." And they slammed the lid back on that box and shoved it into a closet and totally forgot about them for the next 10 years. One day, their curiosity got the best of them, and they decided to take another look at those tracks. And they, as they read them, they began to recognize that it was in complete harmony with the Bible truths they had learned from themselves through a study of the Scriptures. Still, they were a wee bit suspicious about the whole thing, so they put them back in the box, shoved it in the closet, and forgot all about them once again. Well, one day, a British warship called the Pelican showed up on the horizon, and on board was a young man whose life ambition was to go to Pitcairn. His name was John Ite, and he was a Seventh-day Adventist missionary who had joined the church while living in San Francisco. He had heard all the stories about the mutiny on the Bounty and the people who had lived on Pitcairn. He'd heard the stories of Alexander Smith and how these people were Bible-studying, Jesus-believing Christians. And he was eager to share his faith with them. So he hopped on this ship, and he made his way to Tahiti, which got him into the neighborhood somewhat, and he figured he'd hop on another boat and make his way off to Pitcairn, but they said to him, "Hey, there are no boats going to Pitcairn for at least another 2 or 3 years." Now, there was no way John Tay was going to spend 2 or 3 years in a Tahitian resort sampling the onion soup or snorkeling. Or taking long naps on the beach. He had to get to Pitcairn. And 2 months later, on July the 10th, 1886, he climbed aboard the Pelican, and he arrived at the rocky shores of Pitcairn in the middle of September. They sent a message to the folks on the island. "There's a man on board who wants to come ashore. What do you think?" And they talked about it among themselves, and they took a vote to vote the man onto the island. So here John Tay was on Pitcairn Island 3 months after leaving San Francisco and at least 2 years ahead of time. He moved in with the people. He had a laid-back kind of personality, a warm, friendly kind of man, and he easily engaged the people in conversation. He became their friend. He lived among them. He served them and met their needs. And after just a couple of weeks, he had their confidence because they said to him, "Tay, we like you. In fact, you ought to know we have a church on this island, and we want you to preach for us this coming Sunday." Well, it was the opportunity he'd been looking for, so that next Sunday morning, they packed out the church, and Brother Tay stood up to deliver the message, and guess what he spoke on? Jesus and the Sabbath. He opened to them the Scriptures and moved them through from passage to passage to passage, and the clarity of it all was so sure, so rock solid, that they said, "This is it." And that day, every one of them made a decision to embrace Jesus as the Lord of the Sabbath and their lives. The chief magistrate of the island wrote a letter to his sister in America, and this is what the letter said. October 30, 1886. The church on Pitcairn Island unanimously kept the seventh day as the Sabbath of the Lord our God. This was the result of the labor among us of Brother John I. Tay. Now, John Tay had a problem. He was only going to be on the island for 5 weeks. And every adult on that island, all 80 or 90 of them, had embraced the Sabbath. Every one of them had said, "We want to become Seventh-day Adventists." And how was he going to get them all baptized? After all, he was a ship's carpenter, not a pastor. So he did the only thing he could think of. He got back on a ship and headed straight back to San Francisco with the idea he would find a pastor and go back to Pitcairn and get those people baptized and organize a church. Well, when John Tay got back to the United States and he began to speak in churches up and down the coast, all across the country, and people got really excited. He told them the story of Captain Bligh and the mutiny on the Bounty. He told how the people had moved to the island of Pitcairn. He told them the story of Alexander Smith. He told them how James White and John Loughborough had sent this box of literature. He told about the 5 weeks that he'd spent with the wonderful people of Pitcairn. And the folks got so excited. They said, God is in this, and we want a piece of the action. Somehow, some way, we've got to work together so that we can send a pastor and a ship back to Pitcairn so we can get those people baptized and organize a church. So the denominational leadership began to look for a pastor that they could send back. And they went to Nebraska, of all places, to find a man by the name of Pastor Cudney, a man who had probably never seen the ocean in his life. And they said, Brother Cudney, would you go with Mr. Tay back to Pitcairn and get those people baptized and build up a church there? And he said, sure, I'll go. So the two of them traveled to California, and they got on two separate ships. Tay got on a ship heading straight for Tahiti, and Cudney got on a ship that was going to Honolulu with the idea that he would later catch a ship down to Tahiti and meet up with Tay. The problem is, there were no boats going from Honolulu to Tahiti. Every day he was going up and down the docks, the harbor area there, asking, is there anybody going to Tahiti? And they said, no, nobody's going to Tahiti. And after weeks of exasperating waiting, he decided he was not going to hang around Honolulu any longer. So he bought himself a little dilapidated schooner that was not seaworthy and talked five guys into going with him. And as they sailed off into the sunset and disappeared over the horizon, that is the last that anyone ever saw of Cudney and crew. Meanwhile, in Tahiti, Tay waited and waited and waited, and after a while he said, I'm not waiting anymore. Something must have happened, and we have to get to Pitcairn to take care of the people. So he got back on a ship, came back to the United States, and began to travel from church to church to church, telling the story. And people this time, they said, this time things are going to be different. We will take the time to get the job done right. We will take the time to raise the money, vast sums of money that are needed so that we can build ourselves a ship that is seaworthy and so we can hire a number of missionaries and a captain and a crew that can go back to Pitcairn, get those people baptized and build up a church. People all across this country in Seventh-day Adventist churches, small and large, got excited. Boys and girls, men and women in their Sabbath school classes rallied behind the project. They went door to door selling candy, nuts, cookies, cakes, and popcorn balls. And in the space of 6 months' time, they raised $9,000. That was a tremendous sum of money in the 1880s. Tremendous sum of money. But it was not enough. A few other generous donors kicked in the remaining $9,000. And in 1890, they had a ship that was ready to go. It was 100 feet long, had two masts on it, and when the people saw that, the Adventist folks said, we got a name for that ship. We're going to call it the Glad Tidings. Don't you think that would have made a good name for a ship back in the 1880s? An Adventist boat, the Glad Tidings. But then after a while, they said, nope, we're just going to shorten it down, and we will call it the Pitcairn. In October of 1890, the ship set sail from Benicia, just down the road from us here, about an hour, hour and a half. And on board was John Tay with his wife, Pastor Gates with his family, Pastor Reed with his family, and Captain Marsh and a crew of seven. 30 days later, the Pitcairn met the Pitcairn. A wonderful reunion between Tay and the people of the island. They hadn't seen each other in 3.5 years, and within a few hours' time, every one of those adults on the island was baptized and joined the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Well, the Pitcairn spent the next 2 years going from island to island to island, telling people the wonderful story of Jesus. And life and ministry for that missionary band was not easy at all. There were tropical diseases sweeping across the islands, knocking the people off like flies. And one day, while living on the island of Suva, Tay contracted one of those strange diseases and died. They buried him in Tahiti, and his widow got back on a boat and went back to the United States to retire in South Lancaster, Massachusetts. The other men and their wives, they fanned out across the South Pacific, going from island to island, telling the people the story of Jesus. And then at the turn of the century, the cost of the ship and operating the ship became so prohibitive. And with new steamships now on the market, it was decided that it was time to sell the Pitcairn. You know, I think it's time for a new Pitcairn. I think we need a new Pitcairn right here in our church. Something that will give us a shared focus. Something that will unite us and mobilize us for mission. Something so big, so audacious, so out of the box that it will take God showing up among us and working miracles. Everyday, real life miracles in the here and now from here on out. I wonder, is there anyone here today who was ready to go to Mozambique and help build a church? Is there anyone here who is ready to go to Papua New Guinea to give health lectures and to conduct evangelistic meetings? Is there anyone here today who is ready to take a bunch of teenagers to Ecuador to build an orphanage and conduct vacation Bible schools? Anyone here ready to go? Let me ask you another one. Is there anyone who's willing and able and will take the time to go talk to city leaders and community leaders right here in Healdsburg to identify the gaps in the community service programs that are offered here so that we can step in and offer a distinctive service that will meet the needs of our friends across this community? Anyone ready to do that? I'm wondering if there is anyone here who will step up to organize an IWalk group so that we can develop friendships and develop opportunities for spiritual conversations. I wonder if there's anyone here who will help feed hungry kids through the summer. I wonder if there's anyone here who will go door to door and help raise money for the Relay for Life. I wonder if there's anyone here who will get a Bible study group going in their home where you invite a few church members and a whole bunch of your friends and neighbors to join in the conversation. I wonder if there's anyone here who will help us get a young adult ministry going in this church. I wonder if there's anyone here who will say, you know, I really do like the old hymns. I like them plenty. But I'm okay with singing the new stuff here at church if that will help us win a new generation for Jesus Christ. Anyone here like that? Is there anyone here who will get into the baptistry with me and help baptize people as they become part of our church family and celebrate their new life in Jesus Christ? I wonder. Well, you say, it's a scary world out there. I mean, there's all kinds of crime and people get hurt every day. There are pirates and terrorists around every corner. I like it right here in our church. Because I'm safe from all those secularists who suck the oxygen out of the place. I like it here in the salt pile. I feel good. I feel safe here. I don't want to go out into the world. And as we saw last week, the world is our destination, our God-given destination, not something to be run away from. And Jesus is always also telling us here that there will always be risk in his service. Always. When John Tay first went to the South Pacific, people on the islands were eating each other. Tropical diseases were killing people all over the place. When the Gates and the Reeds and the Tays and Captain Marsh and his crew got on that two-masted schooner, those 100 feet long, they traveled 4,000 miles across the open sea. Talk about risk. They had no idea if they'd ever get to the other end. These were bold, visionary men and women who had a passion for Jesus Christ. They had a passion for sharing Christ with their family and friends. And they were willing to move out of their comfort zones. And they were willing to take risk. And they were willing to embrace change. So, I wonder if there's anyone here today who's ready for a new Pitcairn. Anybody here ready for a new Pitcairn? What will it take to get us out of our seats? What will it take to get us on our feet moving again? What will it take to rock us out of the status quo and rocket us into our God-given destination? What will it take to get us using our gifts to build up the body of Jesus Christ? What will it take to get us into our community winning people for Jesus? What will it take to fill up this church and disciple people and fulfill our God-given destiny? What will it take? I think this is a question that Jesus must have asked himself. Because, you see, he was surrounded by a bunch of independent buggers. People who had their own ideas, their own routines, their own way of doing things. And I think each of them had a private mission statement for life, which was this: don't mess with me. So, how do you get people to coalesce around a great challenge? Jesus simply threw his men into this great big crowd of hungry people, and he said, I want you to feed them. You want a challenge? You want your own Pitcairn experience? Then feed these hungry people. And you take care of them, and you will find yourself well cared for as well. But Lord, they said, where are we going to get the food? There isn't a Safeway around for miles. There isn't a Taco Bell in sight. Where are we going to get the food? Where are we going to find the bread? And Jesus said, you've got everything you need right here. You take that little lunch pail from the little boy, and you put it in God's hands, and he will multiply it and do greater things than you could ever think or imagine. You trust God to multiply it, and just watch how far it goes. Many years ago, there was a group of psychologists who began to ask the question, what does it take to get diverse people who are total strangers to each other to come together and become friends? What does it take to get them to band together and work together and enjoy each other's company? And then what does it take to rip them apart and then bring them back together again with a focused mission? What does it take? So they conducted an experiment called the Robber's Cave Experiment. What they did was they brought a whole bunch of 11 and 12-year-old boys up the hill to a summer camp. And there was probably 200 or 300 of them. And as they got off the buses, they had them all get out there on the ball field. And they split them into two groups as equally as possible in terms of size and intelligence and athletic ability. Put them into two groups and gave each group a set of counselors. The first week of camp, they did all the wonderful classic camp things. They went swimming, and they went hiking, and they went canoeing, and horseback riding. There were the campfire songs and stories and sleeping under the stars, and one night they even slept in an Indian teepee. They were having a wonderful time. In fact, they were having so much fun that they got to the place where they said, we need names for ourselves. So one group said, we're going to call ourselves the Rattlers. And the other group said, we're going to call ourselves the Eagles. Well, they were getting along so well and working together so well that the leader said, all right, it's time to rip these kids apart. We got to get these boys hating each other. We got to get them suspicious and distrustful. We got to get them competitive with each other. Let's see what we can do here. So that afternoon, as they were playing baseball, one of the counselors leaned in close and said, hey, Rattlers, it's all important that you absolutely kill, you absolutely smear these Eagles. Rattlers rule! And the next day, when they were having their canoe races, one of the counselors whispered to the Eagles, hey, guys, it's your time. It's your turn. You got to show those Rattlers who's boss. The spirit of dog eat dog competition just swallowed the place live. And within 2 days, the entire camp was a virtual war zone. It was terrible. Camp leaders then said, okay, what's it going to take to bring these boys back together again? How can we get them to be friends? How can we bring the world together again? How can we bring the church together? How can we get everyone moving together with a united mission? Well, they said, fellas, you need to know something. There is a leak in our water line somewhere, and there will be no toilets flushing, no showers going, nothing to drink. We don't have water because there's a leak, and we have no idea where it is. So we need some rattlers, and we need some eagles who will go find that leak and get it fixed. Got anybody? Okay, why don't you and you and you and you go? And boy, those guys went grouching and grizzling and calling each other names. It was a nasty, mean scene. But they found the leak and got it fixed. Next morning, the boys got to the chow hall for breakfast, and the camp director stood behind the microphone and said, "Guys, I've got bad news for you this morning. The truck that brings all the food to our camp broke down 10 or 15 miles down the road. We've got nothing to feed you for breakfast. We need some eagles, and we need some rattlers who will go with camp counselor Joe over here and get that food picked up so that we'll have something to eat. Any volunteers?" And some of them began to raised their hands, and they went into town, got the food, and brought it back. Next day, the camp director announced, "Fellas, I got really bad news. We're all out of money. We're flat broke. We can't even go out and rent a video to show you tonight. Do you think you could help us out?" So those boys began to dig into their pockets, pull out the nickels and dimes and dollars, and then three or four of them volunteered to go in with a counselor to camp to the town and rent a video for that night. For 7 days, those boys achieved extraordinary things together. Their experience together was life-changing. They became best of friends, and when the buses rolled up to take them home, they climbed on the buses and they shouted to each other, "Hey, let's stop in town on the way home and treat each other to ice cream. Hey, let's stay in touch. Let's come back to camp next year. Together, we can change the world." So let me ask you, what enables diverse people to come together with a shared focus? With a shared vision, with a shared mission? What would you say is our Pitcairn right here in Healdsburg? We really do need to come together. We need a shared focus. We need a shared direction that we are moving together so that we can get some momentum under our feet and accomplish the mission for which God has put us here. Today, Jesus is pulling his boat up to the shores of the Healdsburg Church. And he is saying to us, there are hungry people all around you. Now I want you to feed them. Take what I've already given to you and feed the people. And as you care for their needs, your needs will be met as well. Father, what a special church. What a special family feeling we share together. And we need you. In spite of all our gifts and our capabilities and resources, we need you to move among us, to bring us together, to help us identify what our Pitcairn is, and help us to move forward to accomplish that. Lord, I pray that you will keep us humble and open, and I pray that you will keep us ready and get us moving. Help us to be the church you want us to be, to go where you want us to go, to accomplish the mission that you've entrusted to us, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, babe.
Happy Sabbath.
Deborah, good to see you.
No. Hey. Yeah, why not? Yeah, go. Go. Hi there. Good to see you. You've been here once already. Hello. You're the Wards, right?
That's right.
Glad you're here with us today.
Thank you.
We've been here for 34 years.
You were here for 34 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
5 years ago.
Y'all come back. Hi, it's Chris, right?
Yes.
I've met you before, haven't I?
I don't think so. I met your brother at the crosswalk we were playing.
Yeah.
The Redlands.
Yeah. Yeah. He hangs out down there.
Yeah. Have a good service. Nice to meet you.
I'm glad you were here. Hey, thank you for your creativity today. Hey, how are you? I've seen you before.
Yeah.
I'll see you again.
See you tomorrow.
Okay.
Just enjoy it.
Hello there. We appreciate your sermon, but that goes both ways too.
Yeah.
The church appreciates you.
Okay.
Come on. They let you off the hill.
Yeah. Kicking and screaming probably.
Hi.
Hi there, girl with the blue.